If you lie to the government, they'll put you in prison. But when they lie to all of us, it's called being a politician. You think taking guns away will save our kids from the killings? But you're pro-choice, abortion kills way more children. If America's so terrible and racist, it probably isn't safe to encourage immigration. Just saying, all the contradictions are embarrassing. You know who hates America the most? Americans. But we are all the same, we are red, white, and blue. Ashamed to be American? Okay, that's cool. Cause honestly, we are all ashamed of you too.
Y'all are so fake. Oh no, the forecast said that there'd be snowflakes. Whoa.
On this list, we're on to number 8, which is the one I have the most difficulty with, and it would actually be an impugnment to my chosen career to talk less and say more. But I'm going to practice right now and let you roll with it.
All right. Well, I actually had a note on this one. And talk less and say more is pretty much why we only do this show once per week. I probably talk more in this hour than I do during the rest of the week. I understand what it means. We have people, we have politicians who bloviate, who speak in platitudes, who talk at great length around issues without answering a question. Like, do you support the end of gun-free zones? Say more by either saying yes or no. Talk less. You say nothing when you say, well, I understand the principle of, and we need to do this, and we look at, and there are many nuances to, and throughout the history of, so we all know how politicians could talk at great length and never really say anything, which is a complete violation of the code of the West or cowboy ethics. I always take this as say what you mean and be direct about it. And I'm called rude because I'm blunt and I'm direct in these types of things. But as I was saying before, we only do this once per week because I am actually somebody who doesn't speak up very often. And when I do, it has to be something of substance like this. I would rather shave my head with a cheese grater than sit around and talk about the weather, about the Super Bowl, about Taylor Swift, about any light, small talk. I can't do it. It's just beyond me. I'm the one who sits quietly at a party and doesn't say anything unless somebody asks me a question. But I think this is where it stands out the most. And people who've worked with me at the university know this. We have our meetings in DC coming up in May that we meet for 3 days. And it is an extrovert's paradise as they all get to hear their own voices for hours on end. And introverts with social anxiety like myself just suffer through hours and hours of people saying things that could have been said in an email or didn't need to be said at all, or where absolutely no substance, or people just talking about their general feelings with no principle behind it whatsoever. And I sit quietly for hours on end. And newcomers to our organization sometimes think I'm not paying attention. But, and this is just an observation from having worked with this organization since 2011, when I decide to say something, you could hear a pin drop. Because the people who know me are like, this guy is not going to stand up and say something unless he actually has something worth saying. Or it's going to be inadvertently funny or both. So I understand that value of that point. We have people at these meetings that every time it's time for open discussion, the same hands go up and these people, they've got to say, well, I think and I feel or whatever. And 99 out of 100 times, I just sit there quietly because I think I've got thoughts, but are they worth bringing forth to the group at that point? So I understand this concept that there's no point in me picking up the microphone and addressing this room full of scholars and peers and superiors unless I have something of value that other people should hear, whether they want to hear it or not. This is something. Number 8, talk less and say more, is violated by and large. It is almost a rule of thumb that if you are a professional politician, you will violate this rule at great length. And we see it all the time. We see it with the grandstanding and the speeches. We hear it with just asinine things like, I like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Talk about talking and saying nothing. If you want to talk about how you think it is important that children should have irreversible sex changes based on flimsy science of political activists, go ahead and say it. But to go off on some tangent about how you like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches is the epitome of saying nothing while you're talking. So I really wish we had more people who would just stand up at that point and say what they think about it. Like, Governor Gordon, why did you go to the East Coast and say that Wyoming would be on the forefront of the green energy movement? Give a direct answer. Don't be evasive. Don't say I didn't really say that or that was taken out of context. I think that's part of the code of the West, is to just be direct and don't talk just to talk.
Yeah, I definitely don't have a problem with that last part. Talking just to talk isn't normally my standard. I do have a lot to say because I see the game that's being played, the confusion. And again, it's elitism. We're going to use words and concepts that we don't think you know what they mean. And it doesn't matter because we don't use them the way, or at least portray what we're saying the way the actual definitions would, you know, line out. I have almost an incessant need to make sure that it's very clear what I'm saying, of course, in order to defend myself, but also that it's clear to the people what else is being said. This is why you hear me use the phrase, what I hear in that is, or if we'll dissect this a little bit, because I'm about clarity and understanding. I don't mind disagreement. I mean, we just had one, and it was based on me clarifying, you know, a stance and definitions and words and terminology. But what you're talking about is something I definitely see a lot. I call it bloviating, loving just to hear the sound of their own voice. I hate it when they also use that to talk down to people. Saw that a lot during the session, see that a lot in the Republican Party. Some people accuse me of it. When I'm talking down to you, you'll know I'm using words like biscuit head and jackalope, or maybe some more colorful language. But that doesn't advance the discussion. That doesn't help with the understanding or the defining of the principles. So yeah, I think sometimes it is important. I make a living at it, but I also, the other half of my living is getting the sound bites of all these biscuit heads that want to keep running their mouths on the floor into the media. I think it's great that they violate this. And I think it would be better for Wyoming if they could find a way to, you know, trim that down, that ego stroking of just hearing their own voice or seeing their own words in print, and get on to, hey, we are clarifying, we are discussing, we are making sure that conversation, debate, argument can happen the way they keep saying they want it, without personalities, without these attacks or this extreme one-sidedness coming in. And I think that has a lot to do with, even if somebody disagrees, understanding where I'm coming from, or at least being given the opportunity. So, like I said at the beginning, this one is my toughest one. If you just look at the words and say, oh, talk less, say more. Well, Joey's out, if you want to take that literally. But yeah, there are some people out there that just want to run that mouth. And the fact that we had to spend 2.5-3 hours listening to the governor bloviate at the beginning of the session when he could have just said, I'm here to look good by pointing at some people that make me look important by making them look important, and I'm going to pick your pocket for about $1 billion. We could have wrapped it up in 12 seconds there, Gordo.
Yeah, and another thing with it is, like, when I think about personal conversations, I saw this moment before. I saw it with Elon Musk when he was being interviewed on one of Biden's bills for investing, which is a misuse of the words. What they mean is spending. Investing is when you actually get money back. Spending is when it's gone forever. And that's what the government typically does, is spend. Even the Wyoming government actually does have some investments. They asked him at this meeting, they asked him at this conference, is there anything in Biden's infrastructure bill that you like? And Elon Musk said, no. And the audience burst out laughing. And he looked around and I recognized the look on his face. He didn't understand why everybody what was funny about it. They asked him a question. He answered it directly. And I understood. I know what it's like to be like that. That's my life. I don't know how often it's happened where I've sat around and I've said things so bluntly and to the point that people found it humorous because they are become so used to people talking around tough answers and saying stuff like that. And I've been out with friends and they say, do you want to sit next to me? And I say, no. And then they're looking for further explanation. I'm like, oh, and I would tell them at that point. So it really depends on the issue. If we're talking about anything, if we're like living our day-to-day life, I tend to be direct. I tend to give reasons, like even like with my children, when I tell them to do something, it's never because I said so. It's I'm like, I need you to do this because, and then it gets done. And there's no coaxing. There's no threatening. There's no or else. It's just a very direct way of speaking. And that's typically the way I am. Like, and obviously, as your listeners can tell, you get me going on a philosophical or abstract or intellectual issue, and my mind gets stimulated in that manner, then we have a lot of thoughts of it at that point. But I don't think anybody could really cut through what we're saying here and then say, we didn't really say anything. And where this comes into conflict with people who are used to speaking a lot and not saying anything are people who begin to impute meanings or extrapolate out of what you say things that were never said. These inferences. Are you implying that? No, I don't imply anything. I come out and say stuff. So when exactly. I get something like.
There it is right there. I love it. So true. Yeah. You're not going to have to wonder what I'm thinking. I'm going to tell you all of it.
Yeah. It's like I've told people before, and when I've met people, I tell people up front. I used to keep it under wraps, but now I just lead with it because I don't want people to be inadvertently offended. And I've said to people, I'm like, listen, I'm autistic. So if I come across as a little bit rude, it is unintentional, because when it's intentional, there's nothing little about it. You'll know I'm being an ass when I want to. So when I get something like, are you impugning this person's character? I'm like, no, because if I was, I would have come out and said something. I would say Barry Crago's a snake because I think he's a snake politician. He is. I will say something direct like that. People say, how could you say something about somebody so wonderful like that? No. I don't know his personal life, but I know his political life. I know the way he goes forth and tells all the voters how conservative he is. And then I know the way he goes into the legislature. And he is so smart. And he is so eloquent. And he is so polished. And the way he can kill conservative bill after conservative bill. And then he can come out smelling like a rose on the other end of these very intricate excuses of how it was a bad bill or it was badly written or this was this or the consequence is going to be that. There's always an excuse to not follow up and do what he campaigned on. As far as I'm concerned, that's a snake in the political world because he is not putting forth who he really is. His voting record is it's right in line with the Democratic Party of Wyoming, basically. And there are also the opportunistic abilities to vote for the underhand pitches, you know, the ones that are set up on a tee. This is the safe conservative vote. So I'll do this one. So you could hold that up when you're campaigning at that point. So there's an example there. When I see a politician whose character I question, there's one right there. I have no problem saying that. So we go back, we were talking about Crosstalk Live today. Are you impugning J.D. Williams? Like, I don't know J.D. Williams. I don't know anything about him. I would never criticize a man that I don't know the first thing about.
Well, so far we've been talking mostly about principle and integrity, but the next one kind of brings up the other side of what we see a lot of, which is personal gain and agenda in remembering that some things are not for sale, including your vote on the floor. So where do you want to go with that one, Tom?
Well, when I read number 9, I thought about it. Well, reread number 9 because I've been familiar with this, the cowboy ethics. The book came out, almost 20 years ago or more. Remember that some things aren't for sale, except for land, liberty, and principle. Oh, no, those last parts aren't on there, but I think a bunch of people tag those on in their heads. Because how often do we hear that? Our liberty is not for sale. Our sovereignty is not for sale. Our principles are not for sale. Wait, how much money, federal government? Yeah, let's rethink this. Let's rethink our principles of our coal industry. Let's think our principles of our independence. Let's think our principles of low taxes and small government programs. I mean, just think about how much money they're going to give us for Medicaid expansion. I see this all the time in politicians in Wyoming who call themselves Republicans. And I've got to get this out there because I didn't say it as clearly as I wanted to earlier. I have thorough respect for the men and women who run and win elections as Democrats in the state of Wyoming. And we will sit down and disagree on just about every principle of government and every policy, but I will still look these people in the eye and say, I respect you. You're a peer. You're an equal because you have integrity and you stand up for what you believe in and you vote that way. I have no respect for people who carry the banner of the Democratic Party and say the Republicans at this point. And these are the ones who are out there right now who claim to be conservative, who claim to stand up for the people of Wyoming, and they will sell out the sovereignty of Wyoming in a heartbeat for enough federal dollars.
And I want to point out, it's not always just about money. Selling things can also be for comfort, for the perception of security. You don't necessarily have to have a monetary exchange. That is very illegal, by the way. Even pointed out a couple times in our state constitution. But we're not, I'm not at least talking about selling your vote to an individual for money, or even necessarily saying, I'm going to vote a certain way on this because there's federal dollars attached, even though the posture of these traditional Wyomingite Republicans tends to be, oh, if it brings in revenue, it's good for Wyoming, which is a complete farce, because if revenue was the only sticking point for something being good for Wyoming, we would go ahead and legalize drugs, gambling, and prostitution across the board. We'd have all the money we wanted and it wouldn't matter. But that's not the point I'm trying to make here. There's also selling for convenience. And this goes back to living each day with courage and taking pride in your work. When Governor Gordon vetoed House Bill 125, his veto note said, this would obviously be a court challenge and I believe in local control. I think he said the same thing about the regulation of abortions. And we're going to do this to avoid court and to not piss off local school districts and town councils and whatever. That was selling out. That was realizing that, hey, I said I had this principle. I even signed an affidavit saying I would pass this legislation if it came across my desk. But out of fear, out of potential discomfort, out of inconvenience that it may cause if this does go to court, which is also another part of our system. That's the third check and balance between the legislature and the executive. But I'm just going to say no. I'm preempting all of that in our process and selling out. And that's where I had a huge problem with some of the things that came up was, you're not paying bills with your own money there, Mark. You're paying it with our liberty. You're paying it with the foundations and the structure of our process while citing our process as the reason why you don't want to do it. The legislature can't dictate to another branch of government, or, oh, well, you know, the courts are going to go ahead and overrule this. Well, have some consistency there and a little bit of a backbone and stop selling out, because he does it far too often. It's becoming a real problem, and it has nothing to do with how many donations he's going to get to his campaign for whatever he runs for next, or that I think he took money. I don't believe he took any money, no self-enrichment on those bills, but he still sold out.
Well, local control is something I wanted to talk about briefly, because I was having an exchange fairly recently with Gail Simmons, who you know, and she's from the moderate wing of the party. She's here in Sheridan with me. And Gail and I have a fairly good professional relationship. And of course, we disagree on a lot of stuff. And she had mentioned something recently about this, about local control. And it was about the gun bill and government closest to the people was the best, which is a principle with which I agree, until it comes down to our constitutional God-given rights of life, liberty, and self-defense, happiness, all those things. And I looked at it this way. And this is the fallacy of the local control over something like the Second Amendment. We also have the 14th Amendment, and we have federal supremacy of the Civil Rights Act of 1965 that says you cannot discriminate based on race. So imagine a local town passes an ordinance that says white people only. Well, can you now defend that on local control? Can you just say, well, it's government closer to the people, this is local control? No, they're violating the constitutional rights of people who aren't white. We have the 14th Amendment saying you can't apply the law unequally to people just based on their skin color. The Second Amendment we have is you can't abridge the right to firearms. And while as much as people had tried for many years to make it be the ridiculous concept that the Second Amendment was the right of the National Guard and the government to have firearms, I mean, they were well aware the British had the right to have firearms. It made no sense whatsoever that the founders would say, we need to put in the Constitution that the government has the right to have guns. So, but that, unfortunately, in the Heller decision, 5-4, there were four members of the Supreme Court who looked at the Second Amendment and saw that for other than what it was the right of the people to bear arms. That is a right of American citizens. And as I've heard other people say, if you don't like it, have a constitutional amendment. But that is a constitutional right that cannot be overridden by local control. Imagine a city, let's take race out of it. We now have a city where it's mandatory that no one go to church. That's it. We've banned church. It is divisive. It is a racket that runs a business without paying taxes. They don't pay property taxes. It's people fight over religion. People kill each other over religion. So we've decided our democratic procedure, 63% of the people in this town have decided that religion is now illegal. Well, that's a violation of the First Amendment. Everybody knows it. So when the local control argument just falls flat on its face, it's laughably weak to say that when we pass a bill that says you can't preempt a constitutional right locally, that somehow, well, it's going to be a court challenge. Well, of course, everything's going to be a court challenge. There are well-funded forces all over the place, or always, you heard this term before, venue shopping for a friendly judge, that no matter what law you pass, there will be a lawsuit. We ban abortion, there are currently lawsuits over it. We make something legal, there will be lawsuits over it. So the idea that we can't pass a bill because there will be a lawsuit is just laugh out loud funny. You might as well say, well, we can't pass this bill because the sun's going to rise tomorrow. Well, yeah, of course it's going to happen. So when you say, but that was the whole idea of local control. We're talking about some things are not for sale. There are all sorts of things that are for sale. How many people went and sold potentially their integrity and their health because they were told they couldn't work unless they got an experimental RNA injection? I can't even call it a vaccine. It's a form of gene editing. Oh, Tom's an anti-vaxxer. My kid's got all the vaccinations that have been proved and attested for decades on end. And some might say that's why me and one of my kids are autistic, whatever. But I'm definitely not an anti-vaxxer. But people sold their integrity and possibly their lives because they needed the job. That is, I would say that's a violation of the code of the West. You don't give up your principles because you need the money. This could be an argument outside of government. I have three daughters. I have younger female friends, believe it or not. Yes, my wife and I have a very good marriage, and I could talk to anybody because I have these integrity principles. And I talk to them and say that don't give in to the lure of something like OnlyFans. Yes, you can make money. You can sell your value in exchange for dollars. I don't see it any different in terms of integrity when a young lady sells herself. And we won't have to get into the details of it. We know exactly what they're doing. in response, for other people are willing to wave those dollar bills at them, so they will violate their own integrity and they will give up their own principles because, boy, that's a lot of money and I can have a neat lifestyle. I don't see that any different when politicians whore themselves out to special interests for campaign contributions.
Well, I think that's a great lead into, you know, once we're talking about there's some things that aren't for sale, you have to know where to draw that line and say, no, that's not for sale. And I know that's a big one for you here going into the final stage of cowboy ethics. Know where to draw the line. And what do you think on that one, Tom?
This is the one I thought about the most, knowing where to draw the line. This is the rise of the Freedom Caucus in Wyoming, because there are people who live by the code of the West, whether they call it the Cowboy Code of Wyoming, whether they know it came from Kentucky or not. These are principles of integrity and individualism, self-reliance, honor. And we have rural Wyoming, or let's take it outside of Wyoming, because these are principles that are not, these principles are not specific to a certain geography or rectangle. Rural America has always been this conservative. There has been no turn to the far right. I've said it before. I have studied government and history for three decades now. Rural America has always been this conservative. But they know where to draw the line. And this is what's happened. Rural America has been a place of God, family, and country forever, that live and let live, take care of your neighbor, look out for your brother, watch out for your family. You keep your word. You take care of your community. You work hard. You do a dollar's work for a dollar pay. You pay your taxes honestly. You tell the truth. You follow up on what you say you're going to do. And you sacrifice your time and your energy for the people you care about. That has always been rural America. And I know there will be some knee-jerk responses if anybody in the left listens to us, and they'll point to meth heads in rural West Virginia and say, oh, yeah, that's rural America, whatever. The heart and soul of rural America has always been this conservative. And the true meaning of conservative, again, of live and let live, God, family, and country, and taking care of one another without being reliant on the government. So what happened? Where does this backlash come from, where we suddenly have the far right taking over? Or is this trope or this narrative trying to be put forth that Wyoming's being taken over by carpetbaggers? The heart and soul of Wyoming is what attracted men like me here. Because America, you get outside our rectangle, is a sinking ship. And many people turn on the news and they laugh at owning those libs that the cities are falling apart. And we laugh at that bumbling fool who has Alzheimer's, who some people still think is actually in charge. And they act like somehow Wyoming is in a vacuum, insulated from this, as if we don't use the same dollars as that bumbling fool in the White House. As if we are unaffected by the complete tide of illegal immigrants into the country who are being given free rein to live anywhere, who are being shipped to red states, particularly ones that were foolish enough to allow driver's license for illegal immigrants, because then they will vote, and they will vote for the party that brought them here. Rural America is finally getting affected by the policies of the left, because it has been the progressive policies that have come in and tried to dictate to rural America how to live. And that is antithetical to the conservative principle. That's antithetical to the code of the West. You don't dictate to families how they run their business. You don't dictate to people the way they must believe. And we start getting things like Obamacare that say Christian businesses have to pay for the morning after pill, which is a violation of religion, because places like Hobby Lobby believe that it is a form of abortion, which is a form of murder. And while Hobby Lobby paid for dozens of different types of healthcare programs, they refused to pay for things they considered to be abortion. And the progressive government came in and sued them. And thankfully, the Supreme Court ruled the correct way. But this has been the push that the left is going to come in, and there's going to be one-size-fits-all national policy that you will let mentally and emotionally confused boys into the girls' locker room to take their pants off. This is the type of thing that got rural America to say, you've stepped over the line. This is it. You are now affecting my family. You are now affecting my faith. You are now affecting the safety of my community by trying to force your view of the world onto rural America. And this is the rise of rural America in Wyoming. This is the rise of the Freedom Caucus. These are the ranchers. These are the farmers. These are the oil and coal workers. These are the rural doctors. These are the small-time school teachers, even, who are not under the sway of the National Education Association, who said, what the hell is happening? What are they doing? These are the people who stood up in their communities and said, I never thought I would run for office, but somebody has to do something. This is not the right wing looking to take over the state. This is the actual conservative base looking to conserve what's left of the fundamental principles on which the United States was originally founded. And it was not progressive, community-based, federal dollars, green energy, government-provided, health care for all, and men in the women's locker room. That is not what conservative live-and-let-live ideology was like. And I understand the pushback of some people on the right now who sometimes, and this is where I disagree with people on the right, want to force their version through the state. As the state tries to come down on the rural areas and say, you will live like San Francisco, they want to push back. Oh, yeah, well, you're going to live like Crook County, all right? So we're going to mandate everybody have a gun in their house at that point. That's a reactionary view. That's not true conservatism. I understand the emotional knee-jerk reaction because that is a heartfelt reaction to people who are completely antithetical to your way of life, trying to tell you how you have to live. And damn it, they're going to legislate it and they're going to coerce you to live that way. I understand the emotional response to be like, oh yeah, how about we make you live the way we want? And I sometimes see that coming out of the right now. And I hope to be at the convention, a true conservative voice of moderation saying, remember, principles of limited government, individualism, not right-wing statism at that point. But that's it, drawing the line, and it's got to be on the right and left. We need to draw the line that we are the remnants of a free society. And I say remnants because there are states in America that are police states now. They are. There are places, California, Illinois, New York, they have things like hate speech codes now where you can go to jail for the wrong pronouns in New York. That's reality. In the United States, that's why people like Charlie Cole write their books like America in Name Only. Chicago, Illinois is America in name only. It is not a Second Amendment haven. It is not a place where you could practice religion freely without being persecuted by the state. Wyoming is still a place. As I've heard said before, Wyoming is what America used to be. And that is what we crazy right-wing, it's kind of funny being called right-wing because, you know, my most conservative friends call me a bleeding heart liberal. But that's what we carpetbaggers who are trying to take over the state, Rod, are trying to do. Protect some of you from your own arrogance that since you've been here for so long, you have a better understanding of what is happening to you in the United States. And again, Wyoming is not in some vacuum immune to the forces that are currently funding Wyoming politicians to take over this state too.
Yeah, there's a reason why this one's at the end, and I don't know if it was intentional, but it worked out well that way. Throughout all of these, our conversations have always gone back to fundamental principles and having principles and making sure that you're exercising integrity when it comes to your principles. And it really gets all wrapped up in this last one because you don't know where to draw the line if you don't have those principles. And I know we've talked about the platform and a few other items, but really it's a personal sense. You need to have well-developed personal principles that may be similar to these other groups. The platform example I gave, I think, is a pretty good example. I have my own platform, Joey's platform, and my own process when it comes to legislative or policy consideration. And in that includes, you know, the Wyoming Republican Party platform, but I also have my well-established arguments on certain portions of the Republican Party platform. So it really is an organic requirement that if you're going to look at number 10 and even consider drawing a line somewhere and it's going to be legitimate at all, you have to have those personal principles. Party principles, that's a nice thing. That's a good starting point for, you know, the group effort to getting things done of like-minded people. But really, you can't draw that line until you have those principles established within yourself. And then once you have those principles established, I think that's what all these other things are talking about, is having the integrity to stick with those principles for good reason. Don't always do it for personal gain, you know, doing the right thing, standing up for what you believe in. And you're not wrong when you talk about things like, I don't know, what'd you say? You know, we can't do it to the point where we're trying to force other people as, you know, a retributive action or, you know, reparations for making us live the way you made us live for so long. You can fix it or you can blame. And it's really up to you which way you want to go. I prefer to fix problems. And part of my personal platform does include liberty and the defense of things that I fundamentally disagree with, but believe in the right to exist. And the example I'm going to use of that is I did file a formal complaint with the Secretary of State's office against the Albany County Democrat Party and the Wyoming Democrat Party for having put a biological male in a state committee woman position. And that was based on the law. I believe the law says state committee man and state committee woman with purpose, even if it doesn't have a clear definition, for a reason. But if you read my whole complaint, it gets down to, I don't believe that the Democrats intentionally violated the law. They had a reason for doing that. They've got their own ideology, but it's also a private organization. My complaint was based on the fact that the law shouldn't exist. If they want to be depraved nutballs in their own tent, they should have the absolute right to do so until they step out of that tent and start infringing on other people's liberties. So we need to develop the sense of being able to do that more and saying, we can, and this is what I think of when I hear live and let live, not this be ignorant of all the things going on around you, which Wyoming is really good at doing. And I hear from a lot of these long entrenched Wyomingites, oh no, live and let live. Don't worry about that. You can't, you know, have a feeling about abortion. Well, if the government's regulating it, my tax dollars are going to it, yeah, I can. But the rest of it is really just that. It's defense of liberty and being able to say, I can disagree with you and the way you do it, but you don't live in my house, so that's okay. I still want you to be here. If we believe in things like we talked about, the right to life, that includes our worst enemy. I believe you have that basic right, the right to freedom of speech. I believe you have the absolute right to be absolutely wrong, which was my whole point with the formal complaint about the Democrat Party, as long as they're not infringing on other people's liberties. Not a problem. I don't have to provide you a pulpit. I don't have to provide you an audience. I don't have to provide you support. That's all on you in exercising your First Amendment right. But I believe you have the right to do it, especially those that I disagree with, because I don't want to live in the vacuum that Wyoming believes it lives in, or the echo chamber that the Wyoming caucus believes the rest of us should be living in with them. So really, when it comes down to it, number 10 is very important to me, because you can't even pick up the stick and think about drawing the line until you have all that established and are willing to go through the tremendous amount of frustration, annoyance, humility to be able to, I mean, the golden rule, do unto others, you know, treat your neighbors as you'd have them treat you. The bottom line is, yeah, we have opponents and yeah, we have enemies. And I think we even got to the point where you said there are some people that need to die. but we also have a system and a structure that was built by some very thoughtful people about 250 years ago that allowed for enough space in society for everyone to kind of have their own thing up to that limit. And that's where I draw the line, infringing on other people's liberties. I don't know if I could give a better example than what happened with the Democrat Party, but the truth is, we're kind of all in this together. And I hate to quote JFK, but the one thing we all have in common is that we all inhabit this small blue planet. That's where Wyoming needs to start looking. Not, oh, we need to fix all the world's problem, but hey, the planet's not that big. And a lot of the things going on around the world, especially across the country, they affect Wyoming. Like you said, they're coming into Wyoming. We can't bury our heads in the sand and pretend like we're just better than that because we know how to tie wire and stretch fence. That's not going to save us in the end, but we also need to be that thoughtful posture of, not that I look to disagree with you, but I'm okay with disagreeing with you. And it doesn't have to devolve into, what are we seeing out of Casper and Cheyenne every other day now? Another shooting, another stabbing, another shooting, another stabbing. Even Sheridan, like you mentioned before we came on air, a couple of serious incidents of violence that resulted in the loss of life, just because people didn't want to deal with the reality of their station or deal fairly with others. And I think that's our real job. When we draw that line, is saying here and no further, but up to this line, am I dealing with you fairly, even if I disagree?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to get probably a little more philosophical and religious here than I typically do, but you kind of sucked it out of me here, because the whole idea of having principles, from where do we draw those principles? And this is not something I talk about publicly very often. I think I spoke to the Republican women of Sheridan County about this openly one time, but this might be a time to kind of come out of the closet on this. When I hear the whole idea of like anyone who is a conservative Christian being a Christian nationalist, the whole idea of having a Christian theocracy, that is completely contrary to the American principle. And I understand there are people out there who really feel that way. There are people who are really believe we need to teach the Bible in public schools and those types of things. And I'm 100% against that, any more than I would be for teaching about the flying spaghetti monster or forcing the Quran in the classroom at that point. But you need to have principles beyond human construction. And I say that because of my personal experience and from studying history. From my personal experience, I am what I called myself a failed atheist. I really tried. I mean, I checked all the boxes, you know, highly educated, 4 college degrees, high intelligence, free thinker, everything to arrogantly think I knew better than the church. And any time I tried to go that route, God would just grab me by my ponytail and say, hey, you're not going anywhere. I got a better idea for you. So, yeah, I am a Christian, a begrudging Christian who was kind of brought in kicking and screaming throughout my life experiences. So I'm not somebody who was brought up in the faith and a true believer. I completely rejected the Catholic and then the entire Christian viewpoint for many years before I finally came around and realized that there were things beyond my comprehension. So knowing that, I've also seen in history that human beings left to our own devices can rationalize anything. We can commit the most atrocious evils. Just pick up a history book. And I don't mean the internet, that crap that's already been censored for your feelings. Find a history book that was written in the 1970s in paper and actually read what's happened in this world. And you will see humankind, when divorcing oneself from the Almighty, is capable of rationalizing the Holocaust, of rationalizing actual genocides, is capable of rationalizing putting entire races of people into slavery for money, and somehow, even better, able to hold up the Bible and play it like an accordion until it plays the notes that they want to hear to say, look, it says right here in this passage that it's okay to have slavery. Yeah, and it doesn't say very far from there that it's okay to stone your children to death, too, if they don't listen to you. I am not one who sees the Christian church and faith in the Christian God as being one and the same. So there, we got that out on the table now. I'm out of the closet now. Yeah, I'm a Christian. I just don't wear it on my sleeve all the time and yell about it because I believe it's a personal relationship that I have. But it is ultimately the guiding principle that you have to put forth. And when you see the world from that paradigm, things become much clearer of what's right and wrong. And you could start seeing things that, like, yeah, it's wrong to put a person in jail because he said words you didn't like. Not that he threatened somebody, you know. It's wrong to give a double mastectomy to a healthy girl to try to make her feel better about her body, as much as it's wrong to give her a boob job to make her feel better about her body. So I go through a whole bunch of examples on that, but you can't know where to draw the line if you don't have a foundational set of principles. And if you arrogantly, as humankind has done in the past, decide for yourselves that you're going to write your own set of principles, I guarantee your set of principles will come out and they will be carved nicely around your ego and your pride and your fears, and you will make a lot of wrong decisions. Your idea of right and wrong will basically be, and we see this today, I'm not going to point anyone out specifically, your ideas of right and wrong will be about what makes you feel good and what makes you feel uncomfortable. And if it makes you feel good, it's right. And if it makes you feel uncomfortable, it's wrong. And that's how we've gotten in this place right now, where we have diametrically opposed worldviews of right and wrong, because we have about half the country right now where it's based on what feels good at the moment, and the other half now it's based on timeless principles that go beyond the creation of man.
You know, you and I could talk about this for days. We've already run 2 hours on this extra long episode of Wide Right Turn. But the thing is, it's not about us. You know, the people need to have this conversation. They need to develop their principles, because the day you can live with courage the best is election day, of course. And if you want to prove that some things are not for sale and you want to know where that line needs to be drawn, or tell your elected officials where that line needs to be drawn, do it in the voting booth. They don't deserve to be there unless you say they deserve to be there. And your vote is your voice for your future. And hopefully that's based on your principles. But thanks, Tom, for coming once again. I'm glad we got this extra long episode out. And remember, if you're out there wondering, what do I really believe? What are my principles? How should I vote? And you're looking around and you happen to see me and Tom on the side of the road, pull over, say hey. And remember, we're not from the government, but we are here to help.
If you lie to the government, they'll put you in prison. But when they lie to all of us, it's called being a politician. You think taking guns away will save our kids from the killings? But you're pro-choice, abortion kills way more children. If America's so terrible and racist, it probably isn't safe to encourage immigration. Just saying, all the contradictions are embarrassing. You know who hates America the most? Americans. But we are all the same, we are red, white, and blue. Ashamed to be American? Okay, that's cool. Cause honestly, we are all ashamed of you too.
Y'all are so fake. Oh no, the forecast said that there'd be